Hello, and welcome to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies.
Hello, and welcome to the latest in the OIES podcast series. My name's James Henderson. I am chairman of the GAS programme. And just to date stamp this podcast, we are recording it on the 2nd of December in the afternoon. This is the latest in our series on the impact of the Russia-Ukraine war on energy markets. And today I have with me Alex Barnes, who is a visiting fellow at the Institute and who has just published a piece on the EU Commission proposals for gas caps and joint purchasing agreements, which is on the Institute website now. And we're going to talk through his research this afternoon. Alex, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Jim. Good to be here.
So, Alex, let's start then with a little bit of background, if we can. Could you just first give us an overview of EU thinking more generally on the energy crisis over the past few months and the reaction to high gas prices and electricity prices? I mean, I assume the Commission's been under quite a lot of pressure to do something, but I guess the key question is what?
Sure. And it's worth reminding people of the context of the crisis. So Europe has lost about a third of its normal gas supply in terms of the curtailment of Russian gas flows. And this has led to incredibly high gas prices. So they hit a high of about 340 euros per megawatt hour. That's equivalent to roughly about $90 per MMBTU back in August. Now they've gone up and down. They're about to go up again. And so, of course, this is causing huge problems for consumers and industry within Europe. What the EU has done, they've published a number of different proposals. There was the Repower EU communication back in May, which was essentially outlining a plan, but without the details of necessarily how to do it, on how to wean the EU off Russian gas. So that meant increasing energy efficiency, increasing use of renewables, increasing use of hydrogen, for example. And they've also published a number of regulations in terms of increasing the amount of gas that goes into storage and measures to reduce gas demand. What they're currently talking about and are still discussing are measures including gas price caps, joint purchasing of gas, and providing a new benchmark for LNG prices rather than relying on the TTF benchmark.
Okay, well, before we get into the detail of that, I mean, I guess the EU at Commission level is one thing. I presume member states have got lots of different views about what they think should be done. I mean, can we sort of differentiate between member states?
There are a bit, yes, I think we can to an extent, though. There's quite a lot of commonality in the sense that member states have used a mixture of retail price caps. So by retail price caps, I mean capping the price that particular groups of end users use. So, for example, Spain has got a price cap on the gas that is used in power generation. They also have got measures such as subsidies or support for for various types of consumers. And also they've been promoting demand reduction. And as I mentioned earlier, in the context of the EU, promoting the greater use of gas storage, making sure that the gas storage is full before the winter, which has largely been achieved. Gas storage is actually at higher levels than it's been for a number of years.
So, I mean, that's obviously at the retail level. If I understand it, the EU proposals are around, well, the most controversial one is around a wholesale price cap and looking at the TTF benchmark. What's the proposal there and, you know, what's happened over the last few weeks?
Okay, well, it's worth doing a bit of history on this. People have been talking about gas price caps for several months now. And it's important to recognize that these are wholesale price caps rather than retail. So retail is, you can manage, but it's not an ideal thing to do in terms of if you say that domestic consumers only have to pay a lower price and then somebody else subsidize the difference between that and what the utilities have to pay to buy gas on the market. These new proposals are looking at setting a price cap on the TTF front month for gas. So that's essentially one of the key price indicators for wholesale sellers and purchasers of gas. And the reason why this is still being talked about is because there's a group of member states, about 15 of them sent a letter in September saying that they wanted this. But there are other member states who are saying that they don't support price caps. So, for example, Germany and Netherlands don't support price caps as a general rule. But countries like Spain or Italy or France do support them. And the problem is that they haven't managed to agree on whether there should be price caps. And they've had four meetings of energy ministers so far, and a fifth one is scheduled for the 13th of December. And in terms of if there are going to be price caps, what the details should be. And so the Commission published a sort of framework back in October, the 18th of October, which said if we were going to have price caps, they'd have to meet these various conditions, but it gave very little detail of what that would be or how the price cap would work in practice. A number of member states said that's not good enough. Go away, think again, come up with a detailed proposal. The Commission did that, published it on 22nd of November. But then a number of the member states who wanted price caps referred to it as I quote, a joke. So there's a hell of a lot of tension in those Energy Council meetings at the moment.
Okay, so let's get into that most recent November proposal, because I think it's quite instructive. So as I understand it, there were two elements to it. There was a price cap at a fairly high level, if I remember correctly, of 275 euros per megawatt hour. And then there was a differential between the TTF price and the kind of Northwest Europe LNG benchmark. Can you explain, first of all, how the mechanism was meant to work and why there were these two elements to it?
Sure. Well, one of the key issues with any price cap is where do you set the price cap? And the problem is if you set it too low, then you run the risk that people keep using more gas than they should and more gas in indeed than is available. So that causes problems. Obviously, if you set it too high, or correction, if you set it high, then of course the benefit to the people who are suffering from high gas prices is less. So the 275 was the figure that the European Commission came up with. But as a number of critics have pointed out, that was only met very briefly during the summer. And therefore, this price cap isn't going to be of that much help. And then the other bit, and this is where the LNG linkage comes in, the difference between the spot gas price at the TTF and price assessments of LNG transactions in either Mediterranean or Northwest Europe has to be at least 58 euros and has to be like that for 10 days. And the reason that the Commission put this in, I think, is because they were worried if the price cap is too low in terms of the attractiveness of Europe for LNG suppliers, the LNG will go elsewhere. So what effectively they're doing there is saying, look, it's only going to come into place if there's quite a big gap between TTF and those LNG prices. And that should enable the LNG prices, if you're delivering a ship, for example, in Northwest Europe or in the Mediterranean, you'll still find the European market attractive. And again, what the critics have pointed out is that this would mean that this price cap would probably not be used very much, if at all. So the Commission was trying to do that for very good reasons. In other words, not to make it so that effectively we shot ourselves in the foot, or the European Union shot itself in the foot, by making it easy for LNG to go elsewhere rather than come to Europe. But on the other hand, that has raised the ire of the people who want the price caps.
So essentially, as long as there's not much difference between the LNG price and the TTF price, then the LNG can land in Europe at any price up to 275 euros per megawatt hour, effectively, is what they were saying. But as you've pointed out, and I think a number of critics have pointed out, that has happened pretty much never, and so is unlikely to have any impact going forward. I mean, was that really the intention? I mean, in your paper, you kind of suggest that the bureaucrats kind of knew this would never work, and that was really the intention, because, you know, a price cap's fundamentally economics 101, tend to be a highly risky thing to do.
Absolutely. No, I think it was intentional. And I think it's quite clear when you read through the explanatory memoranda that the Commission has done, both for the October proposals and for the November proposals, there's a clear tension between those who are writing the bits and know what they're talking about, and those who are pushing for the price caps and don't know what they're talking about. And the word is that effectively, these ideas for price caps have come down from the Commission President, Ursula von der Leyen, and also from Charles Michel, the Council President, as well as the Member States. And what the Commission, I think, was trying to do with this proposal was simply to avoid the situation whereby if we set the price cap at, say, 200 euros or 275 euros per megawatt hour, and there's a cold winter, not only here, but in Asia, that we set the price cap and say, right, well, we're not going to pay more than 200 or 275. And then the Chinese will say, well, actually, we're prepared to pay 201 or 276. And by having this mechanism in place, they avoid that. And that actually illustrates one of the central problems with the price cap is that if you set it in a way that means that other people are a more attractive market, guess what? That's where the LNG is going to go. And the only reason the LNG has been coming to Europe over the past few months is precisely because European prices have been so high. And we've been sucking LNG away from other markets, such as Bangladesh and China has reduced its imports, etc.
Okay, so there seems to be a logic behind what the Commission proposed in terms of the kind of market dynamics and ensuring that adequate supply does arrive. But as you've pointed out, there are a number of member states who are not happy about this. Another meeting's being called for December the 13th. I mean, what do you anticipate happening at that meeting? Calls for a lower cap, presumably, but which will be rebutted by those with more of a market bent. I mean, what happens then? Does the whole thing collapse?
It's incredibly difficult to know because watching the press conference at the end of the meeting on the 24th of November, the Czech minister who was chairing the meeting, because they have the presidency of the council at the moment, he was trying to put a gloss on it, a positive gloss, and saying, look, we've agreed all the other elements of this paper, of this proposal, but we haven't agreed the price cap. So we just need one more meeting to finalize the price cap discussions. Whereas some of the member states have said, unless we get what we want on the price cap proposals, we're going to veto all the rest of the stuff. So that's one outcome. In other words, one potential scenario is nothing happens. Another scenario is maybe something more like what the Czech minister was referring to, which is namely that you'll get agreement on the other measures and just ditch the price cap completely. Or maybe you'll get some agreement on the price cap. But I think the price cap is full of so many inherent problems that actually it's very difficult to agree. And if they do agree it, I think there's a real risk they'll come back and have to kind of tidy up the mess in a couple of months' time. For example, if we have problems attracting sufficient imports of LNG to Europe, or if it causes problems of allocation of gas within Europe, because that's another effect of price caps. If you start putting price caps in place, how do you decide who gets the gas? Because the price is no longer doing that work for you.
Okay, well, you've mentioned these are the other things that are under discussion. So let's talk a little bit about those. One of them is a kind of intraday price caps and floors, which intuitively seems a bit more workable and seems to be similar to what already happens in gas futures trading in the US. Is that right? And does that look like a more feasible kind of proposal?
Yeah, the thinking of this is it's to kind of stop, you know, massive volatility. And this does happen in other markets. And there's a number of people who pointed out, whether it be other commodity markets or equity markets, for example, they have this kind of thing. The problem and the downside is that it then does limit the amount of trading that goes on. So it's not a cost-free solution. I think the overall thing would be that if it gets put in place, its impact will be less harmful than the wholesale gas price cap, but also probably have less impact than those proposing the measures might think, because by its nature, you know, it stops certain volatility. But at the end of the day, it's the supply and demand fundamentals which are driving gas prices at the moment. It's not because there's something wrong with the way the market's working. The market's working in exactly the way you would expect it to if you suddenly lost a big chunk of your supply.
Okay. Then the other thing that you've mentioned is the LNG benchmark. If I'm correct in thinking, and correct me if I'm wrong, I believe ACER, the European regulatory body, has been tasked with essentially establishing what the benchmark should be by next March and then reporting on it on a daily basis. And how do you think it's actually going to operate in practice?
Well, this one's really bizarre because effectively they're asking ACER, and ACER have literally just put out in the last couple of days a request for people to help them develop this benchmark. They're asking them to do something the price reporting agencies already do, you know, the likes of Platts and Argus, etc., already report on LNG prices. And as curiously enough, in the November proposals for that LNG price differential that we mentioned earlier, it specifically refers to S&P Global's daily spot Mediterranean marker and the daily spot Northwest Europe marker price assessments. So you're asking ASA to develop something which already exists, which is kind of weird. I think the other problem is also the logic for this additional price benchmark is flawed. There's this idea that because the price of LNG that is delivered into Europe is lower than TTF, but somehow this means that TTF isn't properly reflecting prices or the true state of supply and demand in Europe. And therefore, it's corrupting the prices that consumers are having to pay because it's higher than LNG. But in fact, actually, and it's clear from the paper and the stuff written around it, that the people who wrote the paper actually understand this isn't the case, because they explain the way that prices work quite well, but then have, I suspect, been forced to draw a different conclusion because of political pressure. So the real reason why there's a difference is that you deliver LNG into various LNG terminals in Northwest Europe. There is a lot of pipeline capacity to get that LNG to the markets, to Germany and further east, etc., the areas which normally rely on Russian molecules, but not enough. And therefore, a price differential is opened up between where the LNG is delivered into Europe and where it is ultimately consumed. And that's entirely what you would expect. If you have a transportation constraint, you would expect a price to open up. So actually, TTF in that sense is reflecting what's really going on, as are the lower prices in those places where the LNG is delivered into Europe. So there are two things here. One, it's bizarre because it's asking ASA to do something which really is way, way, way outside its, you know, kind of core competence. And I think even ASA would recognize that. The impression I get is there have been some comments there. They're wondering how they're going to do it. And the second thing is, I'm not sure what purpose it serves.
Okay, so I guess we'll see come March whether they come up with anything. I mean, the other thing that's being proposed is a joint purchasing agreement, which appears to be quasi-voluntary but not voluntary. Can you just explain what both suppliers and customers are meant to do around this joint purchasing?
Sure, this is another really odd one, and it's worth bearing in mind the context. The idea of joint purchasing has been around for a long time in Europe. It goes right back to 2014, 2015, and the sort of energy union discussions. And the idea is that somehow that Europe will improve its bargaining power if they form a buyer's cartel. Actually, this misses the point. Europe has a lot of buying power because it's a great big liquid market in which it is very easy to sell LNG cargoes. And that's what's been going on for many, many years. So, but because of the current gas price crisis, what is being proposed is that you have to have a joint purchasing sort of mechanism and demand aggregation mechanism, which everybody is required to take part of. So in other words, you've got to say, this is the demand I need, and it's got to be 15% of the storage target. So it's about 13.5 BCM. And that will be coordinated in some way by a service provider yet to be appointed. Terms and conditions and details of what the service provider are going to do yet to be determined. And then it is voluntary whether you then go on to the joint purchasing, whether you say, okay, well, I've aggregated this demand together and I'm now somehow going to use that number and those customers who are joining together and form some kind of joint purchasing cartel. But there are a number of problems with that, not least of which is competition law, because cartels aren't usually liked by competition authorities. And whilst the commission in its text says we don't think this should be a problem under competition law, they say this doesn't equate to a sort of an exemption from competition law. But we stand ready to work with you to work through the competition law. And I can imagine that might take a bit of time. I think the other thing that's a problem with it is the fact that it kind of reinvents the wheel. The markets, the wholesale market in Europe already aggregates supply and demand, aggregates demand, aggregates it across a whole load of different customers with different credits requirements, different sort of timing requirements, different volume requirements. And it already does that, and it does that really well. So why do you need to recreate this sort of joint purchasing platform? One of the arguments is that it will make it easier for smaller countries or companies to participate, but they actually already benefit from being players in a very big market. It gives them access to gas from all over the world, and that market is the TTF, effectively.
Okay, so again, coming back to this meeting on the 13th, you've raised a lot of issues. I mean, obviously, it would appear that the kind of price cap on TTF is the big issue, but there are seem to be problems around these other proposals as well. I mean, do you think it's realistic that on the 13th we're going to see agreement on any of these issues? I mean, never mind just the price cap.
Subject to what I said earlier about this veto, you might see agreement on the joint purchasing. You might see agreement on a couple of the other things, which are rules on transparency of booking of capacity at LNG terminals and pipelines, and some of the stuff like that. Though, to be clear, none of these things are particularly useful. To be honest, if they weren't enacted, we wouldn't miss them. The only thing in the entire paper which is of any use is tightening up the default rules for how countries share gas in the event of an emergency, the so-called solidarity or gas allocation rules. Because at the moment, the rules say you're meant to, you know, come to the aid of your neighbor, and countries are meant to have agreements in place to do that, but none of them do, or very few of them. I think the Commission says there are only 6 agreements out of 40 required. So those rules are useful. All the rest of it, you know, you could miss. You could delete, and it wouldn't make a difference, because none of them address the fundamental problem of balancing supply and demand. And actually, the much more important point is that there is a massive opportunity cost to all of this discussion. Whilst the politicians have been wasting their time with this stuff, they haven't been focusing on measures that could really make a difference. That means targeted support as opposed to blunt support across the entire market. So targeted support for particular groups like vulnerable households or industry which can't shut off their gas supply, because if you shut down a kiln, you can't reopen it. And also measures in terms of improving energy efficiency, whether it be through insulation, rapid rollout of replacement of old boilers, etc., which would actually have an impact. Because the problem is the supply, we all know, will increase, but only in about 2 or 3 years' time when more LNG supply comes on. But next winter, we're going to be in the same position, if not worse, in terms of gas supply, because the amount of Russian gas we'll get during calendar year 2023 is going to be less than the amount of Russian gas we have received during calendar year 2022. So effectively, politicians have been wasting time when they should be addressing much more useful measures.
Okay, and as we come to the end of the podcast, I guess the other fundamental long-term question is, what does this say about the liberalised gas market in Europe? I mean, is this going to be interpreted as just a short-term reaction to a crisis, or does this tell us that actually there's some backtracking going on around the liberalised gas market, and what does that mean for the longer-term attractiveness of the market?
No, that's a very good question, and I think if you look at it, I mean, this is the usual kind of slightly panicked reaction when people focus on the symptoms and not on the cause. The cause is the massive curtailment of Russian gas. Focusing on the symptoms like the prices, that's like sort of say arguing over how much paracetamol to give somebody who's got a really bad headache when actually they need brain surgery. So it's that kind of reaction. I think there is a risk, though, that if this stuff comes in, it does actually undermine the great success of the liberalized market, because it's worth bearing in mind that all that extra LNG came to Europe and flowed within Europe to where it was needed under the existing market framework. That is a big success, given that you had a massive supply shock. And anything which you do which weakens that in the longer term is going to actually make you less resilient to future supply shocks. So you do risk throwing the baby out with the bathwater, so to speak.
Okay, well, it's a somber note on which to end the podcast, but I mean, I guess the main point is that we should look out for results from the meeting on the 13th. So I'd encourage people to go to the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies website to read your commentary so far. I'm sure there'll be more of it once we see what the Commission and the Member States have decided later in December. But for now, thank you very much, Alex, for giving us a summary of your paper. Thank you to all the listeners. I hope you've enjoyed the podcast. Take care of yourselves and goodbye.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies. You can find other podcasts, as well as our original research, on our website at www.oxfordenergy.org. If you would like more details about our energy transition, gas, oil, electricity, or China research programs, then please contact us at information@oxfordenergy.org.